Wow, well, I am really privileged today to be talking about digital inclusions and digital empowerment with Dr. Melissa Sassy, who is an expert in this area. Hey, Mel, how are you doing?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Awesome. I know you've got some great stats to share with everybody, too.
Yeah, I do. Let me just rattle a few of these off. So, you know, if we think about the population of the world, you know, we're approaching, what, 8 billion, which still kind of, is insane. I can't believe that's where we are right now. And if you think about the 8 billion people that we have in the world, 5.3 billion are online. So that's 66%. Okay. So that means 2.7 billion people. Yes, you heard that right. Almost 3 billion people are not online. Most of those people are using mobile devices. It's reaching its plateau, but it's increasing significantly. And I don't know what you think, Nat, but one of the things I'm most worried about is, are we creating a group of have-nots? It's scary when we think about the wealth. Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm really worried about that, to be honest. And that's why we're raising awareness by doing this interview. And, you know, it really, really worries me. So if you stay and watch until the end, we're going to share the five ways to increase meaningful access to the internet. So that's going to be epic. So how to make sure everyone has access to the internet, steps to digital inclusion, like, where do you sort of begin with that, Mel?
Yeah, so I kind of, you know, I think there are different schools of thought, and it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you ask somebody how big is a boat, you know, you're gonna get a lot of different answers. You know, similarly here, you ask 100 different people, you're gonna get, you know, 100 different yet similar answers. So I think they're, you know, kind of different schools of thought, but I think overarchingly, you know, things kind of revolve around a few different, you know, spectrums, if you will. You know, I think first off, you got to be able to afford what's there for you, right? But imagine there's nothing. You know, my dissertation for my PhD focused on the digital inclusion of underserved and underrepresented communities, and it's tied to solving the most pressing issues of our time. And I interviewed, you know, a number of different tribes who lived their entire lives, even to this day, you know, without access to the internet in their homes. And I, you know, spent a lot of time with each of them, really looking at education outcomes, economic empowerment, you know, healthcare, entertainment, all different kinds of things. And, you know, you got to have that, you know, service in your home. You know, you've got to have in some rural areas, you know, the dynamics from a pricing perspective may not be there. Because imagine you've got to, you know, get that connection out from point A to point B. You know, satellite might be available for you, but is it affordable for you? You know, so I think, you know, first off, you've got to have that connectivity in your home. You've got to have, you know, affordability, because what good is it if you can't, you know, you can't afford it. You also have to have skills, you know, and why do I say skills? Because you used, I think, a key phrase that is often used within development circles, and that's meaningful access. And what that really signifies is it's not about being a consumer of technology. Okay. And I'll tell you what that means in a second. It's being a creator, a maker, a doer that's enabled by technology. So you're using tech, you're using the internet, you're using devices, which again, that's part of, you know, gaining meaningful access. You gotta have devices, but you're combining these things together to generate outcomes. And when I say outcomes, I mean, you know, let's say, for example, you're using it to feed your family. You're using it to, you know, generate, you know, some kind of interesting solution that allows you to have affordable electricity. You're able to, you know, keep your community safe and secure online. Obviously, there are lots of different ways in which we can use technology for communication, for protecting ourselves, for educating others, managing our healthcare, you know, lots of different things, in addition to watching cat videos all day. We're not going to talk about the other kinds of videos that people watch online. That's not today's conversation, Nat. But, you know, if you also look at this from the realm of, you know, you got to have policies in place. And, you know, when I talk about access, you know, how are you going to build the right network? How are you going to support rural communities and schools and teachers and the elderly? if there aren't, you know, funding programs that are available, because not everything's going to have a business model attached to it. Not everything is going to generate revenue. Now, you get people skilled up, it's going to turn into, you know, GDP growth or, you know, economic development, because the people who are learning are going to go out and say, all right, cool, I've seen this local challenge in my local community, or I've seen this local opportunity, if you will, that could become a business. If people are enabled with the right digital skills and the right, you know, kind of entrepreneurial spirit, you know, imagine all of the opportunities and challenges we could overcome, you know, in life, especially if you're talking about from the ground up. I could talk about this all day long in terms of, you know, the different elements that, you know, kind of signify what meaningful access is. What do you think, Nat? Does that make sense? Does that resonate
with
you?
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah. back to this digital divide, right?
Yeah.
What do people, you know, what do you need to know about the digital divide right now? I mean, from where I'm sitting, there's opportunity everywhere, and we'll dig into that in a little while. But what do you think people need to know about it? I mean, from where I'm sitting, I think the main thing is really being focused on the outcome of making money, right? And making your life better, because there's two things. There's making your life better and there's making money, and they're kind of connected, but they can also be separate, right? So it's a real challenge, this digital divide.
Yeah, I kind of look at the digital divide from a number of different perspectives. I look at it from, you know, the, you know, access to your basic stuff. You know, we've got to have access to information, you know, and I kind of see it as, you know, being able to understand what's happening in your community, because a lot of that stuff's, you know, not happening in print format anymore. So it's gaining access to information. It's gaining access to education. You know, it's no, you know, make no mistake, you know, formal education is not perfect everywhere. You know, it might not be perfect anywhere. You know, we've got to be, you know, taking control of our own, you know, kind of destinies when it comes to the learning journey. You know, especially think about the school, you know, shutdowns during COVID. You know, for those who did not have internet access, did not have a device, or maybe were not as comfortable from a tech perspective, whether that's as a teacher, an administrator, whatever, you know, they would have been missing out, you know, essentially out of school for significant periods of time. It's also about, you know, having a political voice. So for example, you know, this month I'm doing a talk with a small NGO that's based out of South. We've got a number of different folks from different countries who are coming in, and we're talking about kind of how do you use your voice in countries where you may not be able to truly use your voice, because these are countries where you often have shutdowns, you know, because of maybe, you know, your political views might differ from, you know, the administration, or there just might be, you know, gender challenges. I'm looking forward to it, because one of the things that we're going to talk about is the concept of digital literacy is a human right. You know, access to the internet is a human right. You know, I know that some people, you know, might disagree with that, but, you know, everything is connected to technology, our health, access to government benefits, applying for a job, you know, everything. You can't even apply for some, you know, fast food or retail jobs if you don't have some kind of tech skills. And granted, you don't need to be super savvy, but think about it. You know, you also need to be able to protect yourself online. You need to recognize real from fake news so that you don't look at something and think, oh, wow, was the Pope really wearing that white puffy jacket? Or, wow, did so-and-so just get arrested today? Or, wow, has a group of guerrilla warriors just come into our presidential office and destroyed everything? This can be detrimental to democracy, to our personal well-being. You know, you've got to be able to recognize this stuff. As you get online, you need to know how to keep yourself safe and secure. So I think it's political, it's social, it's economic, sexual. Every single aspect of our lives these days, it's intertwined by, you know, with technology. But again, I go back to that conversation around meaningful access. And that means outcomes. So it's not just, you know, posting cat videos or casually watching some stuff, but it's truly using it to not only do well, but do good. Make money, make the world a better place, have a voice, and be part of social structures, political structures, whatever you fancy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we could talk about this all day. I love this topic, but
I know, but, it's my passion. Keep focused, Mel.
But it's huge, right? Because there's the unbanked conversation. There's all sorts of stuff, you know, that we could sort of talk about.
I'm trying to keep this about financial. Yeah.
Well, I didn't either. You know, I should have mentioned that. You know, I mean, it opens up a lot of people who don't have any ID, they don't have any banking, they don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And actually, if governments got on board with it, they could become banked.
Maybe they can't even read.
Yeah, maybe not. But then they can learn, right? Like that's so amazing about it. But you know. Artificial intelligence is changing the digital divide. So let's talk about that just for a couple minutes, right? Because there are people who are embracing AI, they're embracing the ChatGPT stuff, and they're becoming like 50% in some cases more productive, or even more than that, right? So that is changing the digital divide, and it's going to create a series of underclass people who really are completely lost. And it's not because they're stupid, it's because they have a very closed mind to this sort of stuff. And I'm kind of worried about that, actually, the way that I see the rate of change happening. I mean, I put ChatGPT on my phone, and obviously there are going to be exceptions. There are going to be people that make a ton of money and really don't need to be embracing AI very much. But actually, their lives are being changed anyway by this. So what do you think about how artificial intelligence is changing the digital divide?
Yeah, you know, I actually look at it from a slightly, kind of nuanced perspective. So I kind of see the digital divide or digital inclusion or digital skills and readiness, whatever you want to call it, digital intelligence that looks at, you know, kind of the skills aspect. But all of these things, I look at it as kind of the core, right? Maybe it's a funnel, you know, let's think about it as a funnel or kind of a, you know, upside down triangle. You've kind of got this, mm-hmm. you know, digital divide up here, which is your access, skills, utilization of technology, right? At the core basic level. And that means kind of like, if you think about it, skills, right? Just skills, you're going to dial them up and down depending upon your competencies. You might be good at some things, like a beginner. You might be an expert, you know, somewhere else. And then as you come down this funnel, you're further honing in on, you know, additional digital skills. And so I see, you know, kind of the AI divide, not as kind of like the same as the digital divide, but kind of like a double click. And I know that's, I hate that word, it's a little bit, or those words kind of a little bit cliche, but it is kind of double clicking and saying, okay, AI is one component of this. And what are the risks? What are the benefits? And I think, you know, overarchingly, people need to understand that, you know, AI is coming, it's already here, and there are risks associated with it, but there are also significant benefits. You know, the AI, you know, AI is not necessarily going to, you know, replace you unless you embrace AI, then it may, right? And so I look at it as, you know, we definitely have some challenges, and some of the challenges I see is around kind of trust, transparency, and really understanding, you know, what goes into these algorithms. You know, I love like ChatGPT, for example, good example, you know, however, you know, I don't want to see, you know, an adult, youngsters, anyone flat out taking that material, assuming it is, you know, it is just ready to go, rock and roll, here we are. Because I think over time, it may be that AI generated content is kind of going back and forth and back and forth, if you will, and may not necessarily be taking in the depth and breadth of, you know, insight that it should. I see there could be risks associated with picking up media misinformation and disinformation, people thinking that it's, you know, it's true, but it's not. And that requires people to have, you know, to critically think through what's, you know, coming in front of them. Because I think we still need to have creativity. We still need to look at that awesome helper and not see it as a replacement of a singer-songwriter, replacement of a writer, a researcher, a journalist, whatever, but kind of something that augments your creativity, helps research quicker, helps formulate your thoughts quicker. But again, if you don't understand AI, it's probably scary. If you don't embrace it, you're going to be left behind. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's as simple as that, isn't it? Really?
One more thing.
Hold on. Oh, okay.
One more thing, real quick. Yeah. Oh, yeah. One more thing. Sorry. You know, I think there's also a gender divide in tech. We have, you know, 28-30% of the tech workforce is made up of women. I think, you know, and I'm not this like crazy diehard feminist person, you know, but I do think we all have bias, whether you're, you know, male, female, you're from here, your ethnicity is that, you speak this language. We all have, you know, unconscious bias. And when we're writing, you know, creating algorithms, our bias unfortunately comes along with us. So I think it's really important that we truly think through where are these algorithms coming from, who's creating them, and making sure that we've got the trust and transparency, the depth and breadth of, you know, different types of people who are, you know, coming in and building tech to ensure that our tech is truly inclusive and driving toward, you know, outcomes that make sense for, you know, folks who are going to be using those, you know, that material or, you know, that product or whatever. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on, but I had to.
That makes a lot of sense, because that's a digital divide in itself, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's a complete digital divide. So what are these five ways to increase meaningful access to the internet?
Yeah. So I'll talk about policy first. Our government needs to make sure, our governments need to make sure that they've got the right policy frameworks that enable the right technologies. And in some cases, I'm not a big fan of big government, let's be clear, but, you know, they're just not affordable business models when it comes to somebody living in a rural community. You know, it's just the dynamics are not there. You know, granted, there's lots of innovation that could happen for business to bring in new tech. And I'd love to keep watching what's happening in the satellite or edge space. So policy will be my first one. Second one is making sure that as, you know, whether it's a mobile operator, you know, internet service provider, you know, satellite company, whatever, that they've got the right affordability metrics in there. Again, that's closely connected with, you know, policy. I don't expect that the government should pay for everything. That doesn't, you know, align to my MO. However, you know, again, that's kind of a fine balance. People need to have access to skills, you know, and that may mean going out and finding them yourself, because you may not have the right, environment that is enabling you appropriately. You might not have, you know, teachers and formal education. We need to take control of our future when it comes to education and economic empowerment. That's hard, because sometimes we don't know where to go and you don't know what you don't know. We need to be focused on outcomes. So understand, and that kind of connects into skills as well. You know, kind of thinking about, you know, what are those outcomes? And how do you share, you know, with the broader community, you know, the role that tech can play to not only change your life, but those around you? And that kind of comes along the lines of inspiring, being inspired, you know, for those thought leaders around the room, around, you know, the community, around the country. You know, how can you inspire others so that people understand, you know, what's possible, you know, the art of the possible, and saying, wait a second, I can do this. That woman looks like me. That man looks like me. They look like me. And I can go out and I can learn these skills, and I could go out and, you know, change the world and, I don't know, become the next whatever. I think we also need to make sure that, you know, people are not just thinking that they should have a mobile phone. Mobile phones are great. They make you, in many cases, consumers of technology. You know, there are a lot of, you know, platforms and programs and apps and that sort of thing out there that can help with productivity, but they're not necessarily enabling true, let's say, creation of new things. So those are my thoughts. I think, again, you ask 100 different people, you're probably going to get 100 different answers. So affordability, skills, outcomes, devices, policy. Those are my five.
Fantastic. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed.
I had to remember them and look on my paper. So there you go.
I was looking over here going, well, don't ask me.
I was looking at my notebook. Here's my notebook to remember my stats.
Yeah, it's absolutely super to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much. Thanks everyone for listening. We greatly appreciate you guys.